Good evening and welcome to Horror. I'm Lee.
I'm Chris.
I'm Adam.
And we are here this evening. We've got something very exciting planned. We have been in touch and had a little chat with James Hood, who made a film called The Caretaker, which showed at Romford Horror Film Festival, which we visited recently and did an episode on. James, his short film Caretaker won Best Short Film at the festival. And he has been in touch and said, would we like to see it and talk about it? So we have watched it. We're going to have a little chat. And then after this, there is an interview that I did when James was gracious enough to spend a couple of hours chatting with me online and discussing making a short independent movie, as well as getting it out in the festival circuit and everything that's involved, all the stuff that we don't normally see. We normally just see we see it on the big screen and have no concept of how it's gotten there. So he kind of talks us all the way through that process. Yeah, so that's very exciting. So that will
And
be
so
up shortly.
what should have happened? We were meant to see it at the festival, weren't we? Was there some change?
No,
No.
it was Romford, in fact, thank you to loads of people who have sort of been in contact and been very lovely and repost about us, because our last episode was about our visit to Romford Horror Film Festival, and they reposted the fact that we'd done an episode, but they mentioned The Caretaker in that post, which we hadn't seen. So I think
That
James sort of
explains
like
it.
thought we had, James, I think, assumed that we were reviewing it in that episode. So he really rather lovely of him offered to let us see it, because we hadn't seen it when we were at the
And
festival.
it won best short.
Yes, over the whole 4 days, 4 days, 3 days. Yeah, so obviously a lot of films in there. There's a lot of competition. So that's
And
quite.
best film actually was one of the films that we watched while we were there, wasn't it? It was
Yes, How to
the
Kill Monsters.
How to Kill Monsters was one best like feature length film. So yeah, so we've seen the best of the Romford Horror, like the winners of the best short and best feature length. So yeah,
Yeah,
it's really cool.
it is
Very cool. Yeah, so thanks again to James for sharing that with us so that we could go and watch it. It's a strange one to put out. Again, I don't want to reiterate everything that's going to be in the interview. But yeah, he was saying obviously 25 minutes is quite long for a short, especially for one with that very slow pace, very dark. A lot of the time the shorts are sort of snappy comedy, more like collection only and stuff like that.
Yeah, it'd be quite punchy, sort of usually they're sort of, but I would say that this needs the length that it is,
Absolutely. Because
because it is all about slow burn. In a weird way, it was like the it had that sort of, I don't know, that sort of weird melancholy of like a ghost story for Christmas, like the vibe of that. It isn't, it doesn't have a sort of overall narrative. It has a mood to it, and it has a sequence to it, but it doesn't have like a narrative in that sort of sense of
Sort of
like a ghost
traditional,
story for Christmas would. But yeah.
but it was
Something that's really stood out, like the music and sound design was very powerful with the imagery. I thought, and like especially the even in the, there were a few shots where it's warm golden sunlight and it still felt quite bleak, and it's quite a juxtaposition.
It definitely it was, and what I really liked about it is it was very bleak, but it was very sort of English bleak.
Yeah, that was one of my takeaways, is it's such a British, as you say. That was why in my mind while I was watching it, I was like, yeah, this is Ghost Story for Christmas, those 70s like The Haunted and those type of shows that had that same feel, that sort of oppressive, and the isolation and everything. Yeah, it was really drew me in to a very dark place.
Yeah, and And obviously we don't want to sort of like go over what's in the interview or everything, but I mean it's basically, for want of a better phrase, a study in you know, what it means to for when people get older and develop dementia.
Yeah.
But in a way that probably surprises you as it goes. You think you know what you're looking at, and then yeah. And it's that sort of it's like not a haunted house, it's a haunted mind.
Yes. Yes. That is a very good way of putting it, definitely.
And it has to be said though, the tiles in the bathroom were the carpet from The Shining.
Yes.
And if, you know, if they're original features, that's fantastic. You know, it's just...
that's really cool.
Yeah, they were. I spotted that on the first watch as well. I was like, oh, yeah, that's... But yeah, it was a fairly common design back then.
Mm.
But yeah, it hasn't really carried through. So it feels so retro now, as you say. And because of The Shining, you automatically associate that design with it. And it's funny because it is that same isolation and it sort of comes from the same place, doesn't it, of people's mental state. So it is actually quite close to The Shining, as you say. It's quite a strange synchronicity.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, no, definitely. And also in line with our, I think that, I mean, certainly with Romford Horror and obviously when we've been going to Horror on Sea at Southend, and a lot of the same sort of filmmakers and everything are all sort of clubbed together. The mother in Caretaker was also in The Haunting of the Lady Jane. She was the main girl's mother.
I thought she looked vaguely familiar and I couldn't quite place it. Yeah,
but again, like I say, there's going to be just like we could do like the Peter Frame Rock Family Trees for the films we've seen at the festivals, of like how it crosses over and who's in what, and you know that director's acted in that, and you know it's really great.
Yeah,
it's a fantastic little community. And again, having Romford as we say, right on our doorstep, but it seems to be a good place for all these people to meet and get together. And I'm sure a lot of collaborations and things come out of days like, you know, like weekends like the Romford Film Festival, where they're all there and they're all hanging out after their films are shown and having a drink together and chatting. And yeah, it seems quite a melting pot of ideas and yeah, collaborations and. Yeah, I can't wait to see what comes next.
Yeah.
But overall, The Caretaker, definitely worth seeking out. And yeah, be prepared. It is
it's a powerful piece.
Yeah, it will leave you affected. Mm. You know, you will not it's not one that you're just gonna forget about.
Unless you're not very human and you know have no thoughts about the way the brain works.
Yeah, you know.
I would say that sounds like me, but it affected me as well. I was left thinking about it for a few days. It's, yeah, it is a really clever piece. It really niggles and gets at you, doesn't it?
Yeah. So well done to James.
Yeah.
And, you said that, so you, obviously the interview, you said you did it in two parts, Lee.
Yes. So just to make the listeners aware, when you listen to the interview, we recorded half, then we had some technical issues and we had to come back to it a few days later. So you will notice that the sound quality is quite different in the first half to the second half. But yeah, I mean, it's all good. And yeah, it was a fantastic chat. And found out an awful lot. So that's coming up right now. Good evening and welcome to Horror. I'm Lee, and we're here this evening for a very exciting follow-up, actually, to our Romford Horror Film Festival viewing that we went to. This year's winner of the Short Film Award was James Hood with his movie I was going to say fantastic, but I didn't want to give any spoilers on our opinions yet. Actually, I say that we're going to record our opinions on Sunday and put it in before this, so it won't be a spoiler. People are already going to be in. But yes, so James has agreed to come on and talk to us not only about Caretaker as a film, but also about the making and how it all came around, and just generally about making a film and getting it out there in the festival circuit. So firstly, thanks ever so much for joining us this evening, James, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on with you today. I'm really excited to talk about everything leading up to Romford and everything that should hopefully happen after.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. We're going to keep our review, which people would have already heard, spoiler-free to some degree, although it's not the kind of film you can spoil. It's just a beautiful journey. And it does take twists and turns along the way, but equally, I don't think that you need to give any of that away to enjoy it. It's just a very aesthetically enjoyable film.
The way to describe it is like if Tarkovsky had directed maybe The Shining. Yeah. Could be one way to describe it. I don't know.
It's got that lovely, especially for us, we're big fans of like British 70s TV horror and that kind of stuff. Oh, and it just had that running through and through. It had that lovely warm feel, and it all felt very familiar and cozy. And it's exactly the type of thing that we would gravitate to generally. So it worked really well for us to see it. So what was the journey of making that? What was the initial impetus? And
it was a big journey, weirdly. So we did the original first draft of the script, because it went through many iterations, happened whilst I was still at uni. And then moving forward, I'd worked on a few other projects and then came back to it, I think, I want to say end of 2020, and then got Bethan on board, who's the lead actress, Bethan Waller.
Yeah.
And because I just finished working with her on a different short, and then I pitched this as what it was then, which was completely different to what it eventually became. And then all the other players came involved, my incredible DOP, Sam Finney, and then my brilliant producer, Matthew Sterling, who I also went to uni with. Everyone kind of came onto board one by one by one. And then we shot it 2020. We shot it 2021, I want to say. Yeah, so we got everyone on board, progressed from 2020 to 2021, shot it October 2021, completed it in post, took a year in post, September 2022 is when we had the first screening. And then for the last year, well, we're in 2024 now, which is crazy. Yeah. 2024, but 2023, we went through the festival run, kind of started it there. Didn't really start to take off till like midway through 2023. And now Romford's happened, and we won Best Film at Romford, which was just sublime. Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, it's really great to say, and we'll get into this more when we get to more of the festival stuff, but, like, we've had, like, a big win at, like, a few different festivals now, which has been really encouraging and has really given us a lot of optimism for what I intend to do with the future and stuff like that. But more of that we'll get into further on down the line. But you take it away from here, Lee, if you want.
No, I was just going to say, I was keen to know. I mean, I always get the impression that a lot of this is this. There's like an independent horror community, and you see everybody at Romford, and you see everyone at Southend and stuff, and everybody sort of knows each other. Yeah, so I was just wondering how you all got together. But it sounds like there were people who you knew from college and you'd known for a while. You didn't sort of go through an audition process or.
Well, yeah. So it's kind of a reach. You know what? There's a few couple of funny stories in that. So Alavo, who was the production designer, who's just a genius, he is going to be going in such wonderful places, and he already is. Him and I met for a really strange coincidence, because I was talking to an original producer who didn't end up jumping onto this short, and I was asking him about this production designer he had worked with on a short that he did, which was very similar in tone. It was a short about dementia, and I was like, oh, can I chat to them? Because the design that they'd made for this, it was like one location, but it was the whole point of the film is a film within a film, and I really liked the design of it. Anyway, fast track, that didn't work out, and then I ended up posting on a Facebook group, like a London filmmakers Facebook group, about looking for production designers. I had a slew of people reach out to me. One of them was the Lavo, and I was like, well, perfect, I found my man. And then we started chatting, and then we found out we had a really strong mutual interest in things, especially Batman. That guy is the biggest, because he worked on Batman as well. He was a draftsman on Batman, and he works and he does all of that. And I found out that he is the biggest fan of Batman ever. And then we just actually, I've got a funny story to tell you. So there's actually a Batman Easter egg in the film. So you know the shot of the clock?
Yes.
So the time of the clock is the time in which Bruce Wayne's parents died. Yeah, nice. I know. It was weird. There's a whole story behind that, and I don't want to delve into that. I'll talk more about the rest of the crew now. But Sam, my DOP, I'd actually worked with him before on a short that my producer Matthew had directed, because Matthew also directs his own shorts as well. And Matthew and I met at university, and then Sam was like an assistant camera op. He was either a second AC or something. And then Sam had directed and shot his own really quick little 5-minute short, which really matched the kind of energy of what I wanted to do with Caretaker in terms of like pacing of shot, in quality over quantity, in terms of like how we tell the story through giving a breathing space within the frame and not, you know, trying to cover the whole thing from multiple angles, you know. And Sam was quintessential in helping us tell that story. And then everyone else kind of like fell into place. Bethan and I we'd worked with each other on a short beforehand, and then getting Rosalind, who played her mother, when we were casting her mother, I said, well, it's very important that you feel comfortable with whoever it is going to be this person. And she said, well, I know just the person, I've just worked with them on this. Bethan did a feature film called The Last Rite, which got to Fright Fest like 2 years ago, I think, I want to say. And Roz had played her mother in that. And then everyone else kind of fell into place. The girl who played the daughter, we literally cast her the week before. That was a whole thing. It was hilarious.
Hilarious now, not at the time, I'm guessing.
No, it was stressful because I realised I'm someone who likes to get everything dialed in, and we hadn't cast the girl yet. Even though that was something we could have cast a week before, you know, she didn't need months of prep or anything like that. It was like just stare at the camera, look menacing. So we needed to find a girl that had the kind of that look and those eyes. That was it was the eyes. And we found this one girl called Daisy, and she was amazing. And her mum was brilliant. It's so funny because we had the interview and her mum was on the call, and then her mum was like, right, bye, see you later. And she just left me on the Zoom call with Daisy, and Matthew luckily was there. And I was like, hi, and this girl was young. This girl was really young. And I was like, hi, do you like the scripts? Like, where do I go from this? But yeah, that's kind of the basic.
Yeah, it's funny you're saying about the casting of the girl and her mum. There's a beautiful shot that I did want to bring up, where you've got the two of them in front of a corner window. And it's almost like a mirror image where they're facing each other, and it's symmetry between them and the... Oh, and it just looked staggering. I was just like, and I know it was fairly early on, and I think that was when I was like, yeah, I know this is like a lot of care and attention has been put into this. It isn't just like lock a camera off, get the actors in. Like it all looks well framed and well put together.
It was a colossal amount of work because we shot in the house that my grandparents lived in. And they sadly are both no longer here, which is part of the reason why the film exists as well, which probably becomes apparent as you're watching it. But like the film was shot in, we shot it in Sidmouth, which is located in Devon. And after they had passed, the house got inherited by my uncle, who then redesigned it. And then when I came to see it after it got redesigned, I was like, oh, Tim, I need to shoot her. I'm sorry. It's gorgeous. And my producer, Matthew, was very much like, do you not want to like set build it in London? I was like, no, man, we can't. Look at the backdrop in the kitchen. We can't. It won't work. You know, and it was such a unique location that I was like, no one else is going to have a location like this. We've got to shoot here. It's so special. And we did. And yeah.
It came out fantastically, really good.
Yeah, I'm very proud of it.
Yeah, and I liked the use of the space as well. And not to give too much away, but the shots with the walls that clearly weren't really walls that were there. Like, I loved all of that, like using all those textures and just bringing everything in. Yeah, it came together really well. It must have been difficult shooting because some of them are quite widish shots. It must have been quite difficult shooting inside an actual house to try and get those.
We shot in 3 days. He did the whole film in 3 days, which was very impressive because the final cut is 25 minutes, but the initial rough assembly was like, I'm going to say 33, nearly 35 minutes. So we had to take out a whole short film in that rough assembly, you know. And it was fine. It was just length of shots. In terms of shooting inside of the house, it. Logistically, it was kind of, I didn't make it easy for myself. Multiple location changes, multiple costume changes, practical effects, because everything was done in camera and cracks in walls and girls with flower hats and everything else. You know, it like it, I wasn't making it easy for myself. But we got it done. We got it done, and it was a really big challenge. I'd love to say that I'm not going to make it harder for myself in the next one, but we're in prep on it at the moment, and it's just like, oh yeah, here we go. You know.
It must be difficult, I'd imagine, as a filmmaker, because in your mind's eye, you can see what you want. So to then say, oh, actually, it's not really practical and I've got to change it to something else, feels like you're giving away too much of your vision and, compromising too much. So, yeah, I can see why you'd be like, I'm going to make this very difficult, but if I don't, I'm not going to be happy with the outcome. And that's what you need, really.
This is it because I'm very particular about trying to make films. Like, I've not made another film since we completed it in 2022. Other people would have had probably another short film made by now. And I'd love to say that I can get another one made this year. I'm confident maybe we can, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm very particular on how I realized how I can't just go out and shoot something on my phone. That would just break me. Like other people can, and my hat goes off to them. It really does. But I'm not that type of filmmaker. But it was funny because after the festival, I said, Spencer, I'll see you in like 2 years, hopefully. He's like, 2 years, just go and shoot something. I'm like, Spencer, it's not how it works. It's not how it works. And I realized my methods very particular, very specific. It has to be because I don't like dialogue in short films. Not in all short films, in mine. Like if another film has dialogue, sure, that's great. But for me, I it, it's not that's not how I want to tell the story. And especially because this is a dementia-orientated story, I'd seen other films depict dementia in a very particular way, and I was looking at it and I was like, it's just not how I think it needs to be interpreted. There's something darker that's not being explored yet, and I think the way to compare it is to the afterlife, because it's the afterlife is a very difficult thing to try and interpret on screen, because there's literally it's anyone's kind of like answer, because no one really knows. And it's the same with dementia. Like we have science and we have facts of maybe how it affects people, but ultimately we have no idea what is going on inside the internal psychology of someone's brain. So it's anyone's game, you know. And that was the without rambling too much, that's very much what I would try to attempt with this film.
I mean, it was great. And the lack of dialogue as well, really, the fact that nobody speaks, really added to that isolation and that feeling of, being drawn in and lost in it, really. Yeah, it felt very isolating watching. I mean, it was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed it. And I can't wait to watch it again because obviously I'll watch it again before I record with the boys and we talk about it.
Only if you need to, it's 25 minutes long. If you watch it once, it's great. You don't need to watch it
Oh
again,
no, I
but
do. I do. I need to make a
okay.
different set of notes, and I need to. Yeah, and I say I really enjoyed it. It is quite dark. So it was one of those originally I'd planned. I was like, right, I'm going to watch it once. I'm not going to make any notes. Then I'll watch it a second time and I'll make my notes. And then I'll watch it a third time with the boys. And I watched it the first time and I was like, yeah, no, that's broken me. I can't watch that again. I was like, I thoroughly enjoyed it, but I get that. I'm sure we all do with some films where you come away and go, I'm really glad I enjoyed that. That was too dark to just restart again immediately.
I love the fact that you used the word broke me. I'm like, thank you, that's great. Knowing that a film, knowing that something I made broke someone is amazing. I'm sorry, that's the highest of compliments. Thank you so much.
Oh, but yeah, it was really and the acting as well. It's something we've talked about before with independent cinema. Obviously, because you've not got massive budgets and you can't spend hundreds of thousands of pounds bringing somebody in. A lot of the time, the acting makes or breaks, especially something like this with like less locations and a smaller cast. If you haven't got the right cast in it, it all falls apart, but it just held together brilliantly. The relationship between all three of them was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I'm over the moon with how that came out. But we worked really hard between Bethan and Roz and Daisy. But Daisy didn't come on until the day we filmed. But Rosalind and Bethan, we had rehearsed extensively in the location for like 3 weekends leading up to the shoot, because we knew with the money that we had and the time that we had, we could not make it up on the day. Like, I know that a lot of low budgets, they don't have the time to rehearse, but Bethan and Roz were kind enough to take the time out of their weekends leading up to that shoot. But it's because they really believed in it, and they really did. We're like, we get what you're trying to do with it, James, and we just want to iron it out. To the point where, like, on the day, it was just tiny, like, decisions. We didn't spend a lot. The thing we spent the least amount of time on the day whilst we were filming were conversations about motivations, because we had ironed all of that out. And Sam and I had spent a lot of time together leading up to the shoot, because we had no time to just work it out on the day. There was no time. It was like, just get in, shoot it, move on. Which was also weird, because Bethan and Roz wanted their space to breathe in the moment, which we kind of allowed them to do, whilst also working under the gargantuan pressures of making a film, which are just it's hilarious. You know, like, just, you want to give everyone the time that they need, but at the end of the day, you're going to have the sacrifices. But it worked. Bethan, she was really upset when we finished. She was like, I don't feel like I did it. I was like, Bethan, you're incredible.
Yeah,
and she was
fantastic.
And she, yeah, and she, it's not until she saw the rough cuts, because I kept her very in the know. Like, a second I had a rough cut, I sent me to her, she was just like over the moon. And after that, I was really happy. Like, as long as she was happy, and as long as I was happy, and as long as my mum was happy, which she didn't see the rough cut. She didn't see the cut until the first screening, and I was terrified. But as long as she came up to me, she was like, James, that's wonderful. I was like, fine, we're good.
Yeah, it's funny you say that about Bethan, because her performance again, that same scene sitting at the breakfast table where she looks like she's almost in tears. Oh my God, I felt for her so much in that moment. Like, it just, you could see the pressure piling on, and that was the thing, as you say, with 25 minutes, although that's a fairly long shot, you've still got a lot to get. Like, you have to connect with those characters before the story starts to open and unravel. Mm. Yeah, and you absolutely fell in because of her performance with how she was feeling and what she was going through almost immediately. It was outstanding. Really, really solid performance. Yeah, so I'm sure she was chuffed when she saw it back, because it was outstanding.
Usually, yeah, absolutely. It was wonderful.
So obviously you've got the film shot, you've now gone into post-production. Where do you then take shorts when you start trying to get them out into the public domain?
So yeah, that's the one that's kind of crazy, because this film has been my first like major film where I've taken out into a festival circuit, and I've met people on the festival circuit, especially because it's interesting, because it's like the horror festival circuit itself is its whole other ballpark compared to just the normal filmmaker circuit. One thing that I realize is you have to really think what is going to work for your film and what type of film are you making, which is crazy because sometimes you have to, before even submitting the films whilst you're in prep, you kind of maybe need to think about what kind of film you're making. Are you making a film for you, which is what this film was for me. It was a film for me. It wasn't for the film festival. Some people, they go out and they make films specifically for the film festivals to get them in, to get noticed, to get seen, to then get maybe picked up by someone to go, we love what you've done, what have you got next? It's like, boom, I've got this film, I've got this feature film script, here you go. With Caretaker, that's not so much the case, even though I do want to expand it into a feature. Who knows when? 5 years? 10 years? Who knows? But that's the plan. But with when you're kind of getting out into the festival circuit, you learn so much. Like, for example, you've got there are some massive horror film festivals that I learn, and I won't mention specific names. But you find out that certain festivals will only accept you, even though they don't say it, but they'll only accept you if you're going to look into them as premier status. Which, for anyone who doesn't know, is premier status is when you are sending your film to that festival and it will be the first festival, it will be the first screening for that festival.
Yeah.
Certain festivals will look at that and go, great, they're accepting us as premier. But yeah, so going back to film festivals, you kind of, one thing that I learned is you should submit, for me, and this is the advice I give to filmmakers, if I ever had the opportunity, if I got a platform, but I would say submit to festivals that you're going to go to. That's what's really important, you know.
Yeah, having like, a presence and
yeah, like even if you can't go to it, if it's something that you know that like your actor, your cinematographer, or whoever your producer can go to it, just having a representative there if your film's getting screened, I think is huge. It really is. Like going to Romford, like I could have quite easily not gone to it, but like, what's the point? It's not that far away from me. And the treatment I had from the team were really good. They were keeping me constantly informed on everything. And I was like, they're putting in a lot of work. And I really felt like I should go. And the screening was amazing. Even it wasn't a huge amount of people, but that doesn't matter. It's more like the energy and the way it's reciprocated. And even though there wasn't a lot of people, I still had people coming up to me afterwards going, we loved it. And I was like, thank you, that's really kind. And they just made you, and that, this is what I love about the horror film festival circuit in particular. You go there, you feel there's just such a welcoming energy. Yeah. And I love it. It's the same with like heavy metal music, like Download Festival. It's like you go there and it's just great energy all the time. So my advice would be for filmmakers, making a film, once you've made it, just feel like, approach the film festivals where you know the market. If you've made a horror film, go for horror film festivals. Don't be seeking out willy-nilly. Caretaker is a bit of a weird one because it's a horror film. It's a drama. It's hard to market, which is also why when Romford accepted it, they were so welcome. And I was like, I feel like you really knew where this film should have gone, and I was, yeah, really appreciative of them.
The Romford crowd were great. It's the first time we've been this year, so we didn't quite know what to expect. But yeah, they were a really good crowd. As you say, it was very high energy. It was, it was really, the thing I've noticed with the horror community, a lot of whom were there, as you say, they don't seem to see each other as competitors. It's like a melting pot, and you know, everybody ends up involved in each other's films, and it seems very like everyone's there to push each other forward. It's such a lovely community. Yeah, so, you know, as we said, Romford went fantastically well for you and your film was wonderfully received. But what was it like for you getting your film to the festival? I mean, how do you go from having the post-production product to actually getting it out there for people to see?
So the kind of main platform that everyone uses most of the time for filmmakers is Film Freeway. And it's actually a really good resource because you're able to utilize, you're able to kind of create lists and do the research, which is kind of the key thing as well when you're kind of designing your festival timeline. on that website, you're sort of able to look at all of the details for every single festival and decide which ones fit, which ones don't fit. And I was having to kind of decide with Caretaker the best route for it. And I thought, well, it does classify as horror, so I'm going to take it down the horror route, because I'm familiar with how that genre operates within a festival circuit. And it's out of all of the sort of genres, it's the sort of most well received and has the friendliest audience for the most part. And Romford was on the list. I was impressed by its good, steady kind of like, it seemed like it was a festival that was growing very fast. It already seemed like it had quite a nice kind of atmosphere and energy to it. And it had a presence as well. There are some festivals you look at that are advertised either on Film Freeway or just on their websites, and you kind of think, does this even exist? You know, there's no photos, there's no like sense of history. Some of them say that they're a first year festival, so you're taking a risk because you never know. But with Romford, they were great. Loads of photos, pictures, videos, evidence to show that they have some sort of grounding. And yeah, it just seemed like a good idea. And then submitted it, went through, and that was great. You know, it was really fun.
Excellent. Cool. So how many festivals have you done, and how many are you planning still to do with?
So the mathematics here, and this is crazy, we got selected to 7 festivals with Caretaker. Mm-hmm. We've won 6 awards, apparently.
Wow.
3 finalists, 2 semi-finalists, 1 nominee, 1 honorable mention. But here's the kick in the teeth. 83 not selected.
What?
Yep.
How can it be so well received by some and then not even?
This is
it. It must be so demoralizing.
No, not at all. Not at all. Because this is it with making films. You are going to get rejected 100 times over. And you just let the crushing weight of that. Well, you let that become a weight that crushes you, or you just go, okay, fine, move on, which is what you have to do, because you know you've got to think about that there are so many grand filmmakers out there who haven't really been given their time in the sun properly. But they're still like great filmmakers, or they're still well accomplished for what they are. And I think people worry too much maybe about the awards, but again, it's different with short films because it's about getting it out there and getting it seen. You know, but it's just the lay of the land. Saying that, however, now that we've won we've had a few good wins with Romford, with another one called New Renaissance, and then another one called the Bristol Independent Film Festival. And we've won like we won best film, a best cinematography, and a best actress award. I've actually started reaching out to older festivals that originally declined us. And some of them have said, oh yeah, resubmit. Because now that we've had a few award wins, that's kind of,
yeah, you know, changed their perception of.
Yeah, it's weird. The whole film festival, the whole short film festival circuit is its own industry, which is what's taken me this long to realize, versus the actual film industry or the TV industry or the games industry. It's its own thing that you kind of have to get in somehow, be it through making a film and then learning the trial and error. I will say my mistake is that I submitted to too many festivals. I absolutely made that mistake. My advice for filmmakers is that you should only submit to festivals that you're probably going to go to, unless it's like a really big one that you feel like you've got a good chance in America. Like say if it's Fantasia or Tribeca or you know, one of those kind of big ones. But yeah.
Excellent. Cool. Well, I mean, that's so strange to think that so many places you got that reception, and those that did show it does just go to show you, maybe the people who are picking these sometimes, not always, just haven't got the same eye as the audience have, because it's clearly doing well for when people do see it.
Well, the thing is, as well, is the film is a bit of a gamble for film festivals, because it's 25 minutes long and it's got a slow pace, which is very anti-festival friendly. And I knew this. I really took that on board going into the festival side of things. And I knew that we were going to get rejected by a lot. And you're not the first to say this, actually. And Romford, they were really confused. They were like, because hey, I was chatting to the amazing Peter Blunden at the festival about it after we won Best Short. And I was telling him we've been rejected by X, Y, and Z. He was like, really? I was like, yeah, it's just the way it is. And I chatted to other filmmaking friends, and they've been like, well, the mathematics is that why would they choose my 25-minute short when they could put in three, you know, 5-minute shorts or four, yeah, 5 minutes? It's unless they really love the film. But other than that, you do have to just think sometimes, okay, I've made this type of film, which isn't particularly festival friendly, go with it. And I know the filmmakers who go out to specifically make festival friendly films because they understand how to do it, which I respect. I don't think I'll ever do that, but we'll wait and see.
Well, as you say, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? You said yourself, you appreciate it's a little bit too long for some festivals. It doesn't quite fit into any neat boxes. But again, it's so then you're given the decision. Well, do I change my vision just to get it out there, or do I do what I want to do and it gets out to less people, but ultimately it's exactly as I want it? So you've got no compromise. So yeah, I think you definitely made the right call. I think it is important, as you say, that when you put it out there, you're like, right, I'm going to get rejected a lot because it doesn't fit into that. As you say, it is horror, but it isn't what you'd necessarily expect as a horror show. It's a lot more thought provoking and a lot darker than the majority. So,
yeah, this is it as well. The amount of times that I had conversations with people working on the short, my producer or whatever, and they said, "Shall we just do like a festival friendly cut?" And I went, "No, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen." Because I also like you see, I don't really like that kind of thing where you've got certain filmmakers that release the director's cut and then the final cut and then the final director's release. Festival cut, whatever, you know. And yeah, like with Caretaker, I set out, as you said, to make a very specific type of film that I didn't want it to just be a gimmick short where the whole thing is riding on this one pitch, this one selling moment, which there's nothing wrong with that. That's still very admirable to make a short like that. It's just those aren't the sort of shorts that I want to make where it's riding on this one specific element that it's building to it, and then it happens, and then that's it. Because for me, and for the rest of the work that I want to make, I want to make something that stays with you afterwards, that you think about, because that's what I'm really drawn to. I'm really drawn to bold stories that are kind of like whirling around in your brain for days on end afterwards. I love that, you know. That's and to me, I've known after making Caretaker, I was like, right, these are the types of stories that I want to make. So, yeah.
So what have you got planned next? Where are you looking to go? So this was obviously a project that was very close to you and was very personal to you. Are you looking to do something similar, or are you moving into Pastures New?
Well, I'm actually literally looking at what I'm trying to do next. And I would say trying. I'm on draft 3. Of it, and I've been writing it ever since. Well, I've been writing it for ages. It's a new story that's not particularly. It's not similar in terms of, but it is at the same time. It's complicated. Basically, the short answer is, I'm working on a new short, which I would describe as a ghost story. It's about past. It's about the past and present kind of colliding. It focuses on a mannequin, a very, very special mannequin, but I don't really want to talk too much about it yet, because I don't even know if it's going to get made, but it's something that I'm really excited about. And yeah, that's what I'm currently working on at the moment. Along with that, actually, I've also got a larger version of Caretaker. Basically, whilst I was editing Caretaker, closer to the end, I realized that I wanted to turn it into a feature film, which is something that I started properly doing at the end of last year. And I want to continue writing that after I've done the new pass on this new draft, on this draft of this other short. I want to dive back into that and see if I can figure that one out. Because it was last year I set it my at last year I set my goal to be like, I'm going to have her first draft on the script, and that didn't happen. So I'm like, well, it'll be my job this year to get the next draft done. Who knows? And then I've got a few other shorts kind of tessellating and sort of working out with my producing team. So yeah, we've got a few things in the pipeline. Nothing's concrete yet. It's, you know, it's really tricky when you're just starting out, because anything could happen. It's good to have a few projects on in the go. But ultimately, long story short, two or three shorts that I'm currently writing. One of them is particularly ambitious and exciting. And if I can get it made, oh, it's going to be amazing. And think of it like a Michael Powell film, but it's like a Michael, but like Peeping Tom meets Frankenstein meets, I don't know, like an Andrei Tarkovsky, like similar in terms of the way that we shot Caretaker, but like taking it back to like a classic Hollywood film from the 1960s, but British. It's just like the vision I've got for it is really, it's really building like something very unique. You know, it's like the Red Shoes almost. I'm talking about it way too much when it's not even going to happen. Well, hopefully it does happen, but yeah, it could be really exciting. And then the Caretaker feature, and then a few other things. So yes, sorry, I went on way too long there.
No, not at all. No, very keen to. It's nice to see, as you say, like you clearly got so much going on in your mind at the moment that it's all just going off in different directions and pulling
forcing
different sources. I mean, it's excellent, isn't it? Kind of bubbling over with, yeah. Yeah, but yeah, it's all good. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Red Shoes, actually. We covered that not long ago.
Oh, great.
And they had an exhibition at the BFI at the end of last year.
Yes, I went to it before the screening of The Eternal Daughter. And it was really funny, actually. I've got a funny antidote, because I went in and to see it, and it was amazing. And it was empty inside of the room. And it was just before the screening. And for the screening, Tilda Swinton and Joanna Hogg were going to be there. And I'm like in the second half of the room, and then I start hearing these like noises and voices. I'm like, why is that voice sound so familiar? I peek around the corner, and Tilda Swinton's there with Joanna Hogg, and they're being given a tour. And Tilda Swinton's so tall, I couldn't believe it. I kept looking up. She was like this the Attack of the 50-Foot Woman. She was wearing these big heels, but I was like, whoa. And it was just like, yeah, that was really cool. But I peeked around, and I was like, I gotta leave. They're having a tour. I don't want to disturb them. Famous people.
Yeah, I'd be the same. I always see people and then I'm like, I'm not gonna talk to them. I get too nervous, and then I just end up spending the rest of the day thinking, you said something really stupid there. So I always just go, I've seen so and so, I don't have to talk to them. It's probably best if I just run away.
I had that exact thing happen to me at the BFI London Film Festival last year, because I was with a friend and we were having a drink, and then we left the bar and we saw Robert Eggers.
Oh, nice.
And it was like, that was like finding a rare Pokemon. It was it was like, I can't not go, like, when is the next time I'm going to run into Robert Eggers? When is he in the UK? Like, wow. And I went up to him, and he was, bless him, he was clearly already in conversation with, I think he was with his partner, and they were in conversation with two other people, clearly invested. And I very enthusiastically went up to him, and he kind of gave me a look as if like, hi, I'm kind of busy, by not rude, but also at the same time, understandably. And then eventually he did give me his time. But afterwards I was like, oh, why did I disturb him? I should have just left it, you know. I was like, he's probably like, who's this? I just was like, hi, really big fan, bye bye bye. And he was like, thank you so much, have a nice day. And it was very clearly lit. He was like, have a nice day. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna respect, leave alone, you know. But also, it was like, it's Robert Eggers.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Just finished Nosferatu, so it was like, ah, yeah, but yeah.
Excellent. So, with regards to Caretaker, once you've finished your festival run, is it going to be available on your website, or are you going to be putting it somewhere for viewing or purchase, or?
So I'm still exploring the options for the afterlife, where it's going to be. The easy answer is Vimeo, but when that will be, it will be sometime this year. When it does get released on a platform, I'll send it your way to show you. But we are looking at particular programs that offer a platform for it to go on, be it Amazon, or the favorite is Alter, but I don't know if they're going to accept it. They may love it, they may hate it, but it's also that Alter's a very competitive platform to get onto. So we'll see. But yeah, sometime later this year it will get placed on. I'm just waiting to hear back from a few more festivals, and then after it's gone through all of those, then we'll just slap it somewhere and send it off to the world to be viewed by everyone.
Excellent. Fantastic. So thank you ever so much for your time, James. We really appreciate it. It's been lovely to talk. It's been really insightful as well to hear, because we see so many of these films. And you don't always appreciate, as you say, that's been a year and a half of someone's life has been poured into this, and so much love and attention and things. So thank you so much for that. We really appreciate it. Congratulations again on all of your wins and nominations. Well deserved. And we can't wait to see what you're going to do next.
Thank you so much.
Where can people find you?
Oh, they can find me on Instagram or Letterboxd. My handle on Instagram is James_W_Hood. And then my Letterboxd is just James Hood.
I'm sure our listeners will be keen to, as much as we are, to keep on top of what you're up to and see when things are being released. So awesome. Thank you very much again, James. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Take care.